Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Both hailing from parts unknown at a combined weight of 501 pounds. They are the Morning Rush Hour World Tag Team Champions. They have no fear, no back down, just a couple of gutsy guys. No one will take those MRH World Tag titles from these men. It's Taz, it's the Moose, illustrious champions, right here every day on CBS Sports Radio.
You know it's every day, Moose and Taz be paving the way. Talking about every sport, you know that they never missing a play. From the NBA to the NFL to college games, they always bringing the knowledge, nobody ever can try to go stop it. Only be talking the truth, only be talking the truth, ayy. You know it's Taz and Moose, you know it's Taz and Moose, ayy.
Live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio, home is so much more than a house. It's the house of your dreams, and for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Mike, Pete, thank you. Job across the way. Bogus, your updates to 9 we go. And big statement game yesterday by the Cleveland Browns down in Baltimore as they take it to the Ravens. I mentioned last Friday when we were talking – or last week we were talking going around the National Football League that this Ravens defense, not nearly what it once was with the losses, especially in the secondary. You saw that when they were home against the Arizona Cardinals and Murray was moving the ball up and down the field on them. They lost a lot in the offseason. And you saw that on full display yesterday as they entertained the Cleveland Browns. And Mayfield had himself a game. Chubb was absolutely fantastic, as we touched upon briefly last hour, Taz, as they go into Baltimore and hand it to the Ravens. And kind of the big story coming out of that game is, you know, the Cleveland Browns, maybe they found themselves a little bit. They were defined by sloppy, inept play, bad play calling. When you look at that Rams loss, a night game last week, and then all of a sudden you get to this, and this scenario is they played basically without Odell Beckham Jr. having himself a game. He only had 2 receptions for 20 yards, a career low for Odell Beckham Jr. The offense was A-okay, and they were fantastic in Baltimore yesterday.
They sure were. I mean, and you know, that's when you have multiple weapons, and that's what Mayfield utilized was Jarvis Landry, you know, as opposed to Beckham. I guess they were doubling up or covering up on Beckham. So, hey, you know what? I got Juice there. I got Nick Chubb running the ball. They looked great. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't think it's a super shock to anyone because we've all talked them up for throughout the whole summer and everything about what the weapons they have and how good they should be, and Freddie Kitchens is the head coach and the connectivity he has with Mayfield and the swagger, the confidence and all this jazz. And you know, you go on a road, you play a team like the Ravens who went into this game 2-1, who had some momentum, with a good quarterback in Lamar Jackson. And you beat them. You beat them convincingly, 40-25. Very impressive win for sure by the Cleveland Browns. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and for Mayfield, who had 342 yards, a touchdown interception over the course of the game, made great use of Jarvis Landry, Ricky Seals-Jones, the former Arizona Cardinal, who a lot of people expected big things from the talented tight end when he was a member of the Arizona Cardinals. He had himself a game as well, 3 catches for 82 yards and a score. And you know, maybe it's a sign of things to come. Maybe it's taking advantage of what is a porous Ravens defense, Taz. But it was nice to see Cleveland kind of play up to the expectations of the talk. And, you know, you and I were both on board, before the start of the season, and them having that kind of a game yesterday. A little bit of frustration with Rex Ryan wearing the brown suit and the orange tie on ESPN before the game to kind of troll Baker Mayfield after the conversation last week, overrated, not overrated. And then Mayfield saying, well, nobody cares unless you're wearing the blue, brown and orange. And then Rex is wearing the brown suit and the orange tie on Sunday, which I thought was kind of funny.
It was great.
From Rex.
I thought it was very funny.
Very funny. And then the Browns go out and have themselves a game. And that's the thing. If they could play relatively, clean football. If they can, they have a game yesterday where, You know, Mayfield plays well. Chubb does a great job running the football. You know, they only have, in the course of the game, six penalties for just 41 yards. They do a better job of taking care of the football. Only one turnover, one pick by Mayfield. They were plus two in the turnover margin. And they weren't defined by sloppy play. It was like almost like that Rams loss grabbed this team's attention when they went down to Baltimore yesterday. And they put it all together. Minimized the penalties. Weren't turning the football all over the place. Weren't defined by sloppy play. It was kind of a tour de force performance and a much-needed victory to get themselves to the 500 mark.
Yeah, and, you know, real quick to circle back, you mentioned Rex Ryan. I actually saw him in a pregame on, he works for ESPN. Yeah, ESPN, and him, Teddy Bruschi and stuff. And Rex Ryan doubled down, basically, on what he said just before the game about Baker Mayfield, basically. You know, he went at him again. He basically said, you know, it's just like you got all these weapons. You got, you know, you have everything set for you, and you got to play better. And, you know, and he more or less, I'm paraphrasing, more or less said, Rex Ryan, you're lucky I'm not, you know, part of that Ravens team today. I guess he meant defensively or as a defensive coach, you know, because, it seems like Rex Ryan would know how to coach this guy up. Rex Ryan talked up his coaching tree and all his years of experience. And, yeah, I guess I don't know nothing. Forget about all my years or whatever. It was actually a very good watch, the pregame, to hear him. He doubled down. He didn't back up on anything. He didn't backtrack, I should say, on anything, Rex Ryan. And Teddy Bruschi brought up the part about Mayfield, basically saying it's about maturity. You got to be more mature. You got to just shut up and go play. People are going to critique you. They're going to say something. Just play. And you know what? That's what Mayfield did once the game started. And I guess he was motivated to some sort of a degree from a lot of the chatter. And he's got a chip on his shoulder. And it gets to the point where you got a chip on your shoulder. And we all respect the chip. I my career was built on a chip on my shoulder. But I didn't tell everyone all the time. You know, it's just like you keep showing that chip and talking, you know, that the world's against you, and it's like, gets to the point where it's like, shut up, dude. Right? No, just play. You're a good player. Just play and just shut up.
Yeah, well, and he's going to answer the critics as he's, and I don't think he's going to stop. I mean,
no, he's not.
Regardless of what Teddy Bruschi says or anybody else, I think he's going to respond and he's going to have those rabbit ears, which might not actually be good for Baker Mayfield here moving forward. But he responded in kind yesterday. Here is their head coach, Freddie Kitchens. After the game, talking about them putting it together. Cut one.
Our guys did a good job this week of executing the plan, executing what they were supposed to do. I think they did a good job of that. This credit needs to go to the players. The game of football is about players, and our guys played well today and did what they were supposed to do. We hadn't won anything. We just won a football game. That's it. You'd have to ask me at the end of all this to tell me, you know, 12 games from now, you have to ask me, and I'll tell you how big this was. I just know I wanted us to go out and play well, play to the best of our ability, and see where it happened, see where the chips fell. And I think our guys did a good job of doing that.
No, they certainly did, coming away with the 15-point victory. And there was an incident over the course of the game where defensive back for the Baltimore Ravens, Marlon Humphrey, and Odell Beckham Jr. got into it a little bit, where Humphrey actually, you know, put his hands on the throat of Odell Beckham Jr.
I didn't see it. I heard about it because I was watching so many other games flip around. I didn't see it. And then Beckham threw a punch, I believe, right?
Yeah, I didn't see it live. I saw a brief replay, but it wasn't a great replay. I know Freddie Kitchens did say that he was going to give Al Riveron a call afterward. You know, when he was on the team bus asking why Marlon Humphrey was not ejected from the game. Now, Humphrey did go to Beckham after the game and apologized for it. And then Beckham, I think, joked around with reporters saying that he was bothered by he lost one of his earrings during the altercation. So here is Beckham talking about that that altercation with Humphrey. Take a listen.
It's hot out there. You know, we're just competing. I'm just upset I lost my earrings.
Yeah, there you go. And then here is Humphrey talking about that altercation with Beckham.
I ran to him after the game and apologized. It's not really what, you know, the brand of football I really want to represent. Whistle blows, you know, it's got to be over with. So, you know, it got my team a flag, so it's never good when you're getting a flag. And it's not really, like I said, it's not the brand I want to represent. So I was happy I was able to talk to him after the game.
Well, it's good that he talked to him. I just watched it. Wow. Yeah, he was basically a full mount choking a guy, choking Beckham on the ground. I mean, it's like, that's not even a fight. That's no. Just like, that's bad. Yeah, that's
no, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if you're looking at that, why does a player not get ejected for that?
I have no idea.
I mean, what are the officials watching there?
Wow.
Where you have a player with his hands around another player's neck? How exactly do you not eject a player for that? That to me makes no sense.
Complete side only because I'm very observant. I'm watching this video of Beckham getting choked by Humphrey. He's got the visor on. He's got the rainbow visor again that he wasn't allowed to wear, meaning Beckham. He's got it on. Remember, he said he couldn't wear that. He had to wear a different one. He had to take it off. He's wearing the exact visor he was wearing, that real rainbow-looking iridescent, I think is the word, visor.
Yeah.
Wow, I guess they let him wear it now. What the hell's going on?
I don't know. Maybe they did.
A little consistency on even the equipment? Jeez. Unbelievable.
Or it could be just the angle it was shot, because the one he transferred over to does have a little bit of iridescence to it. I don't know. I didn't pick up on it yesterday watching the game, which one he was wearing. But that does resemble the one that he had to take off during the Jet game.
Does, yeah.
Based on that photo there. It does look like that. And now he was saying that other players were able to wear it. And they were not they were not taken off the field like he was, and he thought he was being pinpointed. But you know, listen, neither here nor there. Overall, for the Browns, they desperately need that victory. And for the Baltimore Ravens, I'd be a little concerned right now about Baltimore. Certainly Lamar Jackson has shown you the ability to run the football and throw the football. And you look at Mark Ingram's been a consistent back, Taz. Defensively, though, here's the problem with Baltimore is defensively, there's not a lot of lean on that defense right now. You saw in the Kansas City game, now you're going to say, well, that's on the road in Kansas City. That's fine. Now they come back home against the Browns,
right,
who for the first 3 weeks couldn't get out of their own way offensively, and the Browns got healthy on that Ravens defense. Not something you usually see. Now they've got some time to rectify it. This is the reason why they called Jacksonville about Jalen Ramsey. They've got issues in that defensive backfield in terms of coverage. They've got some things to clean up. They lost a lot. When you lose Suggs, and I understand Suggs is at the end of his career, when you lose the other linebacker who went to Green Bay and you lose C.J. Mosley in one offseason, that's a lot to take off one defense that was very, very good a year ago.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think they have something for sure in Lamar Jackson. You know what I mean? There's the explosiveness to him. There's something we've talked about a lot. He's throwing the ball better.
He can throw the ball a lot better.
Yeah, he is. And obviously his feet, the way he runs, his elusiveness is so impressive. And I think his goal is to throw first, but then he could just on a dime just take off. But I don't know. I look, at the end of the day, I do think the Ravens are going to win more games than they lose. But this is a tough one at home, and this is a rival. You know, you're right. I mean, this is tough.
Looking more so at the. I mean, is Lamar Jackson improved? Lamar Jackson improved enough to be efficient enough offensively to make up for the ills defensively?
Or
is he going to be that good at quarterback? Now, he surprised a lot of people the way he's thrown it. I've been stunned. He's been very, very good. You know, and it was better the first couple weeks than he was the last couple weeks. The first 2 weeks then was the last 2 weeks, Taz,
because
of who they went up against, the Chiefs and the Browns respectively. But can they be offensively efficient enough to where then they minimize the impact or deficiencies of that defense? Is he going to be that good? I have a hard time thinking he's going to be that efficient.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point. You know, if you look at the defense, it's more or less a no-name defense.
Darius Smith is the other linebacker. Thank you, Mike.
Okay.
They lost to the Packers.
So besides Earl Thomas, you know, the safety Earl Thomas, he's the only branded name of a guy who's like, I'm not saying a lot of these young guys aren't good players, but it's almost more or less, it kind of feels like a no-name defense in essence. And so to answer your question, no, it's probably not enough that to have a quarterback as good as Lamar Jackson, as young, exuberant as he is, a guy like Mark Ingram, who's running the ball much better now than he did with the Saints.
He's been great.
Yeah, he has been. Brown at that receiver spot, Boykin at the receiver spot. Offensively, I don't think it's enough if you don't have a strong defense, and that defense is hurting.
Yeah, it's hurting right now, and that's going to be the intriguing thing to watch, Taz, because we're now, amazingly enough, we're one game away through the first quarter of the NFL season.
Yeah.
So we're going to have 13 weeks and 12 games left after tonight's Monday night game, which is an absolute doozy. I mean, Steelers and Bengals in Pittsburgh.
Right?
I mean, that is a doozy of a football game. Oh, and maybe Lamar Jackson, that offensive team. But Taz, when I thought about Raven football, I think about defense first and foremost. You know, you've thought about guys offensively over the years. Jamal Lewis, Joe Flacco. There have been guys, Jacoby Jones, the big catch in Denver against the Broncos.
Right, right.
There have been guys that, but you've never really looked at them as being an offensive team.
No.
They're trying to change their identity a little bit to where now they're more, they have to be more of an offensive-minded team because that's the strength of their team right now. I don't look at the strength of their team being the defense. I've always looked at the Ravens. The Ravens could win a game like we saw Sunday night, 12-10. Yeah. Ugly, nasty, we'll kick field goals, you won't get into the end zone, we're going to beat you down and take away your will over the course of the game. That is not this Ravens defense, and that's the one thing I think that people look back on and say, well, the Ravens still have a great defense. No, they don't. Defense play. They're not a great defense.
No,
they haven't been through the first 4 weeks of the year.
No, the days of Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and Saragusa to go back even further, those days of Gonski. That's a thing of the past.
Defenses were.
Those are unbelievable.
They would they would basically take your heart and soul over the course of the game.
They were great.
What they did to Gannon, did you think that hit on Gannon was a dirty hit when Saragusa picked him up and drove him into the ground? I always thought it was a dirty hit.
I thought it was a dirty hit, too. I mean, I like Saragusa, but I thought it was a dirty hit. He was an animal.
Yeah, he really was. A Taz of the Moose guest, Clutch on Sunday. We'll explain. We'll get into that next on this Monday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
Give Taz and the Moose a call. 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Know it's a big kick game on the line. I know you try and get into that kind of Zen mentality, just focus on the snap, spot, and kick. Do you think about that, how meaningful the kick is at all?
Yeah, I really try not to. Something that Kevin Sumlin said when I was at Texas A&M was always kind of stuck with me. He said, nervousness is for the unprepared, which I thought was actually really profound. Because if you're nervous, I think having nerves is okay. Being nervous, though, in my position means I don't know where the kick is going to go. And if I go Monday through Saturday the right way, and again, if I trust my muscle memory, if I trust my talent, my skill level, I know where that ball is going to go, so it doesn't matter what the score looks like.
A 33-yarder from just inside the left hash for Lambeau. Here we go. Cook gets it down. Lambeau kicks it up. And the field goal is good. It is good. The field goal is good, and Jacksonville has beaten the Denver Broncos 26-24 at Mile High Stadium. This one belongs to Duval.
There you go. Jags Radio Network. Lambeau with the game winner for Jacksonville yesterday in Denver in the wind as they take on the Broncos, as the Broncos have lost two games this year, whether it be Lambeau or whether it be the great Pinheiro from the Chicago Bears. They lose two games at the gun. There you go.
Did you see the nerdy dance Lambeau did?
I missed it. No.
He did little, like, whoever was the holder stood up and he looks at me, did a little, like, arms out to the side thing. It was coming from me, it's a lot.
It's funny.
It was like one of the whitest dance moves ever.
Good for him.
Mike, good job on that.
Nice job, Mike, putting that together. You know, as Jacksonville comes back, all the way back, I mean, Denver looked like they had complete control of that game. Gardner Minshew, the legend of the mustache quarterback, continues to grow, Taz, down there in Jacksonville. There was no Ramsey, that whole saga going into yesterday as well. They dealt with all of that, go on the road, and the Broncos are no great shakes, but find a way to win the game. That's a good win for Jacksonville.
I tell you, that week one when Foles went down, I saw Minshew. I'm like, there's something about this kid. There's something there, and I remember saying it on the show here. And he's been doing pretty good for sure. He's definitely locked in. He's a star now. And speaking of stars, I mean, a guy who finally showed up, and that's Leonard Fournette. I mean, he ran the ball like beast mode Jones. I mean, 225 yards, unbelievable. No touchdowns, but God, dog it, man. They fed him and fed him a lot, and he played great. And you know what I thought was really odd? Well, in a good way but weird, was Jalen Ramsey. He's on the sideline in a Jaguars hoodie. And he's not playing now, so he's got the back. We don't know if it's the pregnancy.
Think he was out due to the back.
I guess, yeah, right. Yeah,
he was on the flight out to Denver,
right.
But I guess the back issue flared up. I mean, he still wants to be traded. I mean, whether or not they decide for him not to play yesterday, Taz. I mean, it's so much drama and so many different layers to it. What do you really believe? What's true? What's not true? No, it just seems like it's kind of written in stone, Taz, that the days of him being a Jaguar are kind of numbered. I mean,
I'm still holding out hope.
No, I get it. I get it.
Because I'll tell you
I'd love to see him remain down there in Jacksonville, but that's not the vibe you're getting.
No, but see, I got a different vibe. I mean, everybody looks at things differently. I got a vibe that he made the trip. He was there, and not only was he there, he wasn't just standing on the sideline talking to somebody, like not engaged in the game. He was fully engaged in the game, and he was talking to the defensive back coach, talking to the other cornerbacks and stuff, and safeties. He was in the, like literally in the game, like on the sideline. So I thought that was a good sign. I thought like he wants his team to win, and that's a good sign. I don't know. Maybe I'm being gullible here. I think there's a chance he still might stay a Jaguar.
I hope you're right. I mean, I hope you're right. I don't know if I feel one way or the other wholeheartedly, 100%, whether he's going, whether he's not. I thought maybe there'd be good vibes last week, Taz, and then he basically is out due to the flu, and then the back injury, then his girlfriend has a baby that he's making a flight, he's probably will play, and then he doesn't play in the game. And you mentioned him being on the sideline, being an active participant, you know, but he is still held fast and held firm, whether it be hopping on TV or podcasts, that he wants to be traded from Jacksonville.
Yeah.
That the trade demand is still there. That he wants away from that franchise because he feels like he was disrespected. Now, it goes back to that, obviously, that Houston Texans game and the back and forth that he had with Marrone, because the very next day his agent was contacting the Jaguars organization saying his player wants out.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I was happily surprised to see him as involved in the game on the sideline that he was. I mean, you know, I'm sure, we'll see. I guess we'll know this week, I would assume. It's got to come to an end soon.
Well, the 29th is the trade deadline.
Right.
So we've got a ways. Got another month.
Right, unless they do something.
It could happen this week or it could happen three weeks from now.
I see what you're saying.
Right,
yeah.
So we've got a month to figure out one way or the other. That's the broad spectrum. It could happen, obviously, sooner than that. Doing more, brought to you by the Home Depot. Visit HomeDepot.com for details on flooring, appliances, and bathroom home improvements. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing. How about Nick Chubb? The Chubb piled up 3 touchdowns on the ground as the Browns went down to Baltimore and beat the Ravens 40-25 in a victory to get themselves to the 500 mark at 2-2 on the season.
Andrew Bogus just entered the
studio. What's up, Andrew?
Great. Good morning.
Guys, no trade demands here.
Good morning.
I'm happy to stay.
There you go.
Hang out.
All right.
Deadlines be damned. Thank you so much. So the Dallas Cowboys showed up at the Superdome averaging 179 rushing yards, scoring over 32 points per game. Then only ran for 45 and scored just 10. QB Dak Prescott, a loser for the first time this season.
It was tough. Between the run game, the pass game, we just couldn't get it going early. We finally got a drive in the second half, but when you're playing in an atmosphere like this, when you're playing a good team and a good defense like that, that's too late.
That second half drive ended with a 1-yard TD run from Ezekiel Elliott, the only touchdown anyone scored last night. The Saints won 12-10 on 4 Will Lutz field goals, the last of which a 26-yarder early in the fourth quarter. After the loss, Cowboys owner Jerry Jones said star left tackle Tyron Smith suffered a high ankle sprain. Left shoulder injury for Bears QB Mitch Trubisky. He didn't even last 3 minutes against the Vikings, but Chase Daniel came in and led Matt Nagy's team to a 16-6 home win.
Zero changed. Nothing. And that's the beauty of having a guy like Chase.
Daniel threw a touchdown pass while the Bears' D held Dalvin Cook to 35 yards on the ground. The Bills took their first loss of the season, 16-10, to the Patriots, and lost QB Josh Allen to concussion protocol. The Bucs outscored the Rams in L.A. 55-40. Seattle won in Arizona 27-10. The Browns stormed through Baltimore 40-25. And the Chiefs snuck out of Detroit 34-30. They trailed on 4 different occasions, but finally won on Darrell Williams' 1-yard run with 20 seconds left. Andy Reid sums up the win as only a football coach could.
Hey, not all of Mozart's paintings were perfect, huh? That was beautiful, man. Hey, the end result, though, that sucker's going to sell for $1 million.
Okay, now here's the thing. If you're listening carefully, Mozart, not a painter.
That's funny. He's a musician, right?
He did, yes. He was.
What is Andy Reid talking about?
He played bass.
Yes, he played bass.
Thanks to the Chiefs for tweeting that one out so we can all make fun of their head coach. Off the field, Antonio Brown reportedly prepared to file 9 grievances against the Patriots and the Raiders, most of them connected to unpaid signing bonuses and paychecks. College football, 4-0 Baylor giving head coach Matt Rhule an extension through 2027, while Rutgers fired Chris Ash. They were 8-32 under him after Saturday's 52-0 loss to Michigan. The St. Louis Cardinals are finally NL Central champs, dumping the Cubs 9-0 to close the regular season. Up next are the Braves in a division series that starts on Thursday. The Brewers settle for the wild card game. That's tomorrow night in Washington. The Cubs, meanwhile, are not bringing back manager Joe Maddon. The Pirates fired Clint Hurdle, and the Giants lost Bruce Bochy's finale 9-0 to the Dodgers. Chase Elliott won the NASCAR postseason race in Charlotte. Ryan Newman, Kurt Busch, Eric Almirola, and Eric Jones knocked from playoff contention. And Elena Deladon scored 22 points plus 10 rebounds to lead her Washington Mystics past the Connecticut Sun 95-86 in Game 1 of the WNBA Finals. Boys?
All right, football season is back, and there's no sweeter way to celebrate than by adding Snickers and Skittles, the official candy sponsors of the NFL, to your game day spread. It is Taz and the Moose with you here on this Monday morning on CBS Sports Radio, Sirius and XM 206, the app as well. And remember, download that podcast each and every day, radio.com, Apple Podcast, and also Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast, where they're available. And the download numbers have been very good. So we appreciate that here from our team to yours. And Taz, you know, speaking of, you know, disappointments, we talk about the Baltimore Ravens. How about if you're Matt Patricia and you're the Detroit Lions yesterday, who had, I'll be honest with you, they were by far the better football team against the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, whether it be turnovers, you know, the fumble, you know, ints going in, whereas then picked up by Breland, taking 100 yards for a touchdown, going the other way. I mean, think about that swing. That's a 14-point swing the other way. You're about to score a touchdown, or at least at the very least kick a field goal, and you end up giving up a score on that play. And it was correctly called on the field. They let the play play out. When you look at replay, the ball was loose before the player was down because he's laying on top of either a fellow Lion or a Kansas City Chief. But the Lions had so many opportunities yesterday. And I thought watching that game, I'd like to get your opinion, I thought they were the better football team. I thought they were better than Kansas City. You know, they didn't end up that being that way at the end of the game. But during the game, that's the thing that's going to haunt them when they watch the game film, is that if they just played a little cleaner game or a lot cleaner game, they would have won that game.
They were definitely, you're right, the better team. The Lions, for sure, at home, were, they looked great. I was shocked when I flipped over this game, and it was probably towards the end of the second quarter, and I was like, wow, look at this, and I couldn't believe it. And look, time of possession-wise, I mean, the Lions dominated the Chiefs. Okay, if you look at, I mean, Pat Mahomes had a good game. He did. I mean, pretty good game. He threw for 315 yards, but not as good as game as Stafford. Matt Stafford, he played great. I mean, he played really, really well. 3 touchdowns, 21-34, 291 yards. He had a great day.
And was playing with a hip and ankle injury.
That's right. I forgot about
because
that.
Because he was questionable whether or not he was going to play, and then they declared him ready to go about 2 hours before the game.
He looked excellent. I mean, he looked excellent. Really managed the game perfectly. Everything was great. It's just, it looked like the Chiefs were going to lose, but hey, that's what great teams do. They find a way out, especially on the road, to get it done. I mean, to a certain degree, we saw it with the Patriots, not as good as this game, with the Patriots and the Bills, and definitely with this here, where the Chiefs remained 4-0 against a Lion team who was locked in. I mean, they were playing great at home, but just not enough to finish it off.
Yeah, not enough to finish it off, Taz. And you mentioned it in terms of Stafford playing very, very well. The Lions, all of a sudden, remember how many years the Lions couldn't run the ball?
Yeah.
Now they can run it.
They can run the ball.
And they ran the ball very effective yesterday against Kansas City. We know the Chiefs' defense is nothing to write home about, right? Spagnuolo was brought in. They changed a lot of that personnel. They could use a corner as well. But, I mean, still, with that being said, they go on the road. And I knew a lot of people that were on the Lions yesterday. And, you know, I didn't love it. I didn't trust Detroit. Maybe you got to start trusting Detroit a little bit more as you learn a little something. I mean, you're right about good teams, Taz, and great teams. They find a way to win. You saw that with the Pats up in Buffalo against your squad. And you saw that yesterday by the Kansas City Chiefs, who are flashy offensively, have got some things to work on defensively. But You know, they walk out of that building as a 4-0 football team, and that's the most important thing at the end is what's up on the scoreboard.
Yeah, and Kerryon Johnson, running back for the Lions, had a day. He had a day. He played great for sure, 125 yards, and he was getting a ton of touches, over 25 touches. So he had a great, and that was a big part of it. You know, obviously, you have a quarterback who's throwing the ball, and he's getting guys that catch the ball left and right for him, and he's throwing a bunch of yards and getting a bunch of yards. And then you got a running back like Johnson who had a great day. I mean, that's going to lead to a victory, but they didn't get the victory. It felt like, if you watched the whole game, it felt like the Lions won the game, but it didn't happen.
No, it did not. Yeah. Did you see the catch and toss by Kelsey?
Yeah, the little pitch. Oh, that was awesome.
We see great things every single week in the NFL.
Cool. That was really cool.
Watching that yesterday when I was at the FanDuel Sportsbook, and the place basically went bonkers.
Yeah,
I mean, because
cool.
They have a guy make that catch. Usually you see those things at the end of the game.
Right.
Teams desperate.
Right,
they're down a touchdown. They need to, all of a sudden, they need some kind of miracle. You know, they do the hook and ladder, so to speak.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if it was drawn up that way or if McCoy was just happened to be in the area, but Kelsey makes the catch. And then McCoy, as he's getting tackled, they're about to get hit, tosses back to McCoy. And McCoy runs about another 25 yards inside the Lions' 10-yard line. It was awesome.
You can't coach that. And I don't think it was a design play my opinion. I don't think it was.
I agree with you.
It's two legit players. A guy like McCoy, you're taught in football, right? A lot of people don't talk about this. You're taught always be around the ball. You're on offense, be around the ball. Even if you don't have the ball, if you're a lineman and the ball's downfield, hustle, get to the ball. Because you never know when the ball's going to get turned over. That's something no one ever talks about. It's a basic football thing. And that's what McCoy did. It's called trailing the play. He trailed the play. And Kelsey, having great instincts, being a former quarterback. I think he was a quarterback in high school, Kelsey. And having good hands, obviously, and having good awareness and not being selfish, he pitches it. Just great stuff. It was really, really fun.
It was one of the
of that in football.
Yeah,
that's,
I agree
fun,
with you. It was,
you know,
one of the cool plays that you saw on Sunday in week 4 of the National Football League. It really was. And the Lions come away with a hard-fought game in which, as you heard Andy Reid celebrating, it's one of those game stats where I think you walk out of that building feeling like you stole one. I don't think there's any doubt about it with the Kansas City perspective.
Yeah,
the
like
Lions
the Patriots did up in Buffalo. Same thing.
You're familiar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, a close call for Clemson. And Mike Leach rips into his players. We'll get into a little college. We'll do that next. It's Taz and Moose with you. CBS Sports Radio.
Coast to coast, pillar to post. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, if industrial plants could capture CO2, think how we could help lower emissions. ExxonMobil is working to make it happen. That's the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. This week's unexpected play, how about the play of Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers? Winston threw for 385 yards, 4 touchdowns to lead Tampa Bay to a 55-40 win over the Los Angeles Rams. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Taz, interesting college football Saturday.
Yep.
Number one, obviously, has got to be Clemson surviving against North Carolina. Got no issue. I mean, with the Tar Heels going for the win late. With under a minute 20 to go, they score the touchdown on the second goal from the 1 yard line, the 1 yard touchdown run. Then you drop the 2-point play to try and take the lead at that stage. The 2-point conversion does fail. Clemson survives 21-20. You know, they're no longer the number one team in the land, though, after struggling on the road in North Carolina. They are able to march on and get the victory. I saw some people reading into it saying, oh, look at this, look at that. I mean, it's a long college football season. It really is. I wouldn't necessarily say this is a precursor of things to come for the Clemson Tigers. Certainly Lawrence has not captured the nation like I thought he probably was coming off that national championship game. I thought Trevor Lawrence would have a much better year offensively throwing the football this year than he has.
I don't disagree with that at all. I don't. I do want to say about that UNC game, though, because I did watch the game. it feels like eons ago, but I did watch the game Saturday. They had Clemson not on the ropes, but they were knocking them out. I mean, Mack Brown has got that UNC team, and he's doing some good stuff with that program. I know they're sitting 2-3 right now, but I'm telling you, they're going to get some legit recruits in there over time, and he's done a great job all his decades, all his success at Texas,
yeah,
as we know. But I'm telling you right now, man, they got talk about getting out of Dodge, you know, getting out of Chapel Hill with a win and head back down to South Carolina. That's what Clemson did. They got the hell out of there because, dude, that game was – they dodged a massive bullet in that game. I don't want that just to be like, whatever. And now the whole Alabama thing, I don't know. Listen, man, for me, Alabama – and I love Nick Saban. I mean, we talk about Alabama a lot here on the show. And it's tough for me to have just throw them in that number one spot. They haven't played a game this year so far. I mean, I shouldn't say a game. You know what I mean? They haven't played anybody of, you know,
of consequence.
They're not challenged. You know, there's no challenge. They're not.
No, true.
Their schedule's like, you know.
No, I get it. I understand. You're not wrong about that. But I don't think anyone expected Carolina to do what they did against Clemson either on Saturday.
No, I agree.
So I agree. All right. So then I guess it's a case of how much do you read into the close victory for Clemson? Do you read into it? Okay, well, they're the number one team in the land. They were going in. They won on the road against a team that they should have taken care of business against. They didn't. It's a credit to Carolina for doing it, Taz, because Alabama, yeah, you're right. I mean, they haven't gotten into the heart of that SEC schedule. They haven't.
No.
They haven't played a lot of tough teams up until this stage. They haven't, but they've handled all those teams like you would expect Alabama would handle those teams.
Yeah, Clemson, we see it every year. We see it every year.
No, I'm sorry. I get it. Continue. No, my point being is that Clemson did it on Saturday.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I can't even draw a comparison. But if it was Alabama, North Carolina,
right?
You know, Alabama probably would have handled that a lot easier, considering. And I know Mack Brown's done a nice job with Carolina.
Yeah, but I get what you're saying. Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, the point being, and it would have just been well, Alabama beat Carolina by 25. Just Alabama steamrolling a team that they should steamroll. I mean. Yeah, I don't get caught. Here's what people get all caught up in hot and bothered in terms of one or two. And listen, Clemson won. Could I make the argument that they should still remain and be the top team in the land? They won the game. Yeah, I could still make that argument. Did they do it pretty? No, they didn't do it pretty. But ultimately, Taz, you know, it's a matter of whether or not you're part of that Final Four. I mean, Clemson couldn't lose that game. They couldn't lose to Carolina. They didn't lose to Carolina. And, you know, they'll get better as the season goes along. I don't think – do you look at that game, Taz, and are now concerned about Clemson moving forward?
No, because I do think Dabo Sweeney's going to – they're going to just get much better from that, from what happened. Like I said, I watched the game, and they just didn't – they did not look – like the number one team in the country. They did not look like Clemson. They were shook. They were shook a good amount during that game. Travis Etienne, who I feel should be, you know, the great running back for Clemson, I feel should be definitely highly considered in that Heisman race. He's got to play better in this situation. He did not have a good game. Like you said about Trevor Lawrence, I agree with everything you said about Trevor Lawrence. He's got to be better too. You just
too busy on the beach with his girlfriend snapping photos.
I've seen that.
Yes.
But, yeah, so it's just I do think that, you know, it's a tough thing because you're right. I mean, what do you do? So do you leave them there because they get a one-point victory on the road against a UNC team that went into the game 2-2? Okay, the Tar Heels were 2-2 going into that game, and then they get the loss at home to the Tigers. And so, okay, some would say, well, Clemson still won. I mean, that's what some would say. I don't know, man. I'm kind of on the fence. I just feel like Alabama, you know, getting these victories over the next New Mexico States and the Southern Misses, and they smoked Ole Miss 59-31. Now they're going to play Texas A&M. Let's see what happens. They're playing Texas A&M on Saturday. Let's see. Maybe that's a game.
Maybe it is.
And they're playing at College Station, so maybe we'll see. We'll see what happens.
It would be great. I mean, we all want to see the top teams at the top Taz get challenged, and certainly Clemson was on Saturday against Carolina, and you're right about Mack Brown, you know, who said at the end of his days at Texas really wasn't enjoying himself any longer being a head coach. He said he's back in Carolina. And just because of, you know, everything and the pressure that comes along with what he did with Texas, and he had a lot of success for the Longhorns. He said he's enjoying being a college football coach once again down in Carolina, and he's done a nice job so far at the onset for the Tar Heels. You see what Mike Leach had to say. So yeah. Washington State, after collapsing against UCLA and blowing a monumental, historic collapse. This past week, they got throttled by number 19 Utah, 38-13. Here was the Washington State, always outspoken, Mike Leach after the game. Take a listen.
And what's amazing about this is most of these guys were on the same team last year that was a tough team. Last year's team was a tough team for us. They're fat, dumb, and happy and entitled. So I think we've got a bunch of free agents running around there that think they're pretty special. And then, you know, as soon as something doesn't go their way, they want to pout.
Oh, my God. You know, it's funny what you said. It is funny. Unless your kid's on that team, then it's not funny. But listen, I mean, who knows what's going on at practice or in the locker room there. Mike Leach, you know, very intelligent guy, very quirky guy. I believe he has a law degree. He's got a long history. Of, you know, his name got put on the map, as you know, Moose. Texas Tech, the great job he done there coaching. Look,
well, as we talked to the former Oklahoma coach last week.
Oh, Bob Stoops.
Stoops brought him to Oklahoma.
That's right. Forgot about that.
Brought him to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
To be his offensive coordinator.
Right. That's right. And he's a guru with that, no doubt. Meaning Mike Leach, very intelligent guy. But I do think there's a lot of sound bites from him lately. Last year, this year, he's the star of the Washington State Cougars. Like, he's the star. Like, it's all about him. It's too much with him. He has a hot take, takes a shot at his team, their kids. You know, I mean, and if Nick Saban said this about his team, I'd say the same thing about Nick Saban. I'm just saying, the 18, 19, 20-year-olds, yeah, they could be entitled. They're pains in the asses. Trust me, I got a 20-year-old. I get it. But you still, when I say they're kids, I don't mean like, oh, be nice to them. I don't mean it like that. I'm not being a snowflake here. What I'm saying is, I don't think you need to send a message. Look, if you're a head football coach of a Division I college program, and you got to send a message to those kids on that team by using the media and taking a shot at them, then you don't have that locker room, coach. You got to get control of that locker room. I that's all I'm saying.
Well,
I don't think
you might be right.
You're not an NFL team here.
Well,
you know?
No, that's true. You're right about that. Now, he did say, you know, our team loves reading about people telling them how good they are, and love reading the press clippings and this and that. And that's the way, and you know, kind of like we play like it. I guess if you're Leach Taz and you tried everything else, and the team responded. No, they suffered an embarrassing loss against UCLA.
Right.
Right? What was the high watermark they were down when UCLA was down, what, 32 points?
Yeah, something like
I think
that.
It was like 32 points, right? Yeah. UCLA historically in those games are 2-6. Mm. The rest of college football in like the last 10 years, whatever the time frame it did, like 5 years, I saw the stat on ESPN. The rest of college football is 0-144 when down 32 points in any given game, right? So it was a monumental collapse. Team didn't respond well.
Yeah.
You know, no, if that didn't great, the team did not respond well, they got their butt whooped by Utah, who's a better football team.
Well, they're ranked 19 in the country. You're playing Utah in Salt Lake. I mean, you're on the road.
The game wasn't close.
Yeah, the game wasn't close. No.
And they got whooped. Now, you can look at the coaching and this and that, but if you're Leach and you try, and I don't love the messaging. I'm not going to say that I do. I don't think anybody that is a student athlete should be called, you know, fat, dumb, happy, and entitled. I mean, I don't think that's the case at all. But if you're Leach and you feel like your message is not getting across, maybe this is the only way to grab the attention of this team is to say it to the media, to be outspoken, and maybe he's trying to get this team to respond to it.
Well,
like the team did, like the teams have in the past.
I understand.
Maybe that's the way he's going now.
Maybe. Let me ask you this, Moose, okay? And how does this help with recruiting? So if your son is an awesome football player and he's a potential five-star recruit and he's a junior in high school, and he's caught them, and now he's got a bunch of D1 schools coming at him. And let's say you live on the West Coast, you know, and are you going to want your kid to go play for Mike Leach after he calls out the team like that and his team stinks to boot? Like, no, I'm not. Are you?
No, I would not. I would not want my son to play for Mike Leach. No, I get it. I'm not saying it's right, but I will say that his offense does play. You know, Gardner Minshew's in the National Football League having a lot to do with what he did at Washington State a year ago and leading the nation in passing and put him on the map. And, you know, guys have been successful for him. And it played very, very well. I don't disagree with you. He's a divisive guy. He has been.
Here's the thing, because he talks about the team wants to hear, read about themselves, and read their own headlines. He's like that. That's how Mike Leach is. He's a mark for himself. He is. He's been like this for a long time. And as far as, you know, this, look, college football teams, I don't care what he had in Minshew there last year, the year before that. Because college football teams, it's a different team every year. Because kids graduate. It's not like a pro team. So there's a turnover every season.
No, I get it. But my point about bringing up Minshew is that you know if you go there and you're a quarterback, you're going to get an opportunity to throw the football. And you're going to put up gaudy stats.
I agree with that.
My point is, you know, guys are going to look for opportunity to play. That's it. Right. I don't disagree. I don't think it helps in recruiting.
That's what I'm saying.
If you're an 18-year-old kid, your mom and dad hop online and you see, wow, I'm getting recruited by Washington State. And the Cougar coach just called his team fat, dumb, happy, and entitled.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm sending my son there.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't disagree.
Why would I bother, you know?
We'll come back to 3. Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.